And we are back with episode 724 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and perhaps we could call that Adventures in Babysitting, Bear Sci style.
And, I have to say that for an episode that was mostly in the dark, I think the writers did a pretty good job. But we have a great deal of episodic discussion to discuss this time around. And before we get to any of that, Edmund, if you could give a disclaimer.
Absolutely. We will discuss just about anything that might have come up in these episodes. If you have not seen them, you will be spoiled by that.
That's right. And we are going to get started right away here, as we usually do, with our bottom three for the week. All of the episodes this week came in above average, which is nice. That hasn't always been the case recently.
No.
But there were a few that did predictably show up down at the bottom. And, when I say predictably, I mean these are shows that we've come to expect to be down at the bottom. And the first one here is Wayward Pines, Season 2, Episode 9, Walcott Prep. With the Abbeys closing in, Jason makes a fatal judgment call. Pilcher recalls finding his chosen one. Theo and Xander put their differences aside to save the human race. This one came in at an average of 7.75. And, quite frankly, the only thing that really helped this episode from being at the bottom of the list was that there were some pretty messed up ideas at the center of the episode.
Yes, yeah. It's been kind of one of the hallmarks of this season is they've been doing these flashbacks to Pilcher and when he was setting up Wayward Pines. Unfortunately, I've been finding that it is just pointing up the fact that, these characters from the first season are much more interesting than these ones we're supposed to care about in the second season. These episodes which are showing a lot of the past stuff always feels like an uptick, but not necessarily for very good reasons in the long run.
That's right. We are seeing the season kind of come to its eventual close, but it does seem like this season's going to be coming in a bit lower, and if I see any indication from the ratings here, this will probably be the end of the run. I don't think we've heard any good news regarding renewal, and I don't know that any of us are really pounding the pavement for it.
No.
Right, next on the list, we have A Dark Matter, Season 2, Episode 4, We Were Family. Three reconnects with his former crew. The android finds herself in unique company. And this one came in at an average of 7.25. And we're four episodes in. I still just don't feel anything about this season that's telling me how I'm supposed to get into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or what story I'm supposed to be getting into in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amusing to me that we have reached this point in the second season where, okay, in the first season, I got that it was the whole conceit of them all waking up amnesiac and going by numbers, and, you know, we were slowly getting details filled in. Now we're at the point where actually a lot of these backstories, or presumed backstories, of course, you can't necessarily trust everything that gets said or presented, have started to be filled in, except we're still there. They're still referring to each other by numbers because there's still there's enough character there to really think of them by their names.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that we were given names, we were given numbers,
mm-hmm.
and quite frankly, even with two sets of things to call everybody, I still don't really have a great grasp of who is who. I mean, there's a couple of characters there that it's obvious who they are, but it's mainly by the unfortunate stereotypes, you know, tough chick, yes. Asian guy,
geek girl,
things like that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, not exactly awe-inspiring, but be that as it may, that was not the lowest,
a
tie for the lowest score. Down at the bottom of the list, however, and we have been seeing this week after week, Preacher, Season 1, Episode 9, Finish the Song. Jesse is on the run while those around him face life-altering decisions. Meanwhile, the cowboy returns to Ratwater to exact his revenge.
Yes.
And this also came in, as we mentioned, at a 7.25. And my main reaction to this one is that it's exactly what it is that we've been saying the whole season.
Yes.
Lots of interesting imagery, lots of cool scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this going?
It did particularly amuse me, and I've been getting intimations of this in the previous segments, this was the moment when the cowboy segments clearly reveal that yes, they have watched a lot of Sergio Leone, and especially Once Upon a Time in the West. So it was, there were certain shots that were pretty much direct homages.
Yes, indeed.
So, but yeah, but it is the whole thing of, you know, yes, it's fascinating, bizarre stuff to watch, but we still don't have a lot of say. Even though they started to explain some things, it's still not really hanging together. It's just whole sequence of intriguing scenes sort of strung together. And I actually have a couple of other friends who have been watching this as well, but who have had completely similar reactions to us of yes, we don't really know what's going on, but we find it fascinating to watch anyway.
Yes, let's see here. Next on the list, we can then move up to the top three for the week. There's things that we can talk about in a little more detail because we're a lot more excited about them. And coming in at number three, we have The Last Ship, Season 3, Episode 7, In the Dark. The Nathan James must dodge an overwhelming threat. Meanwhile, President Minchner is put in a terrible position following a revelation in St. Louis. And this episode came in at an average of 8.25, so a nice jump there. Oddly enough, only a half point higher than one of our bottom three.
Yes.
Yes, everything in between came in at the same score. It's interesting spread this week. But for me, I really thought that this was a great solid episode, and I gave it about a half point for that last little bit, last twist at the end.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It hit like right between the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, that's certainly what I was going to bring up first as well. I mean, particularly, I mean, obviously it was horrifying and shocking, but also I liked the way it felt completely in tune with what they've been setting up, you know, this bizarre situation of, somebody, you know, being, rope, you know, tasked with being president of, this, disjointed United States post plague and, the pressures it would put on you, and when something like this comes out, under conventional circumstances you might tough it out and take whatever punishment is coming in the press or in public opinion, but in these sort of more extreme circumstances, and there had been sort of some intimations that he wasn't necessarily the most stable individual, having it go to that shocking extreme, that was quite a gutsy twist for a show that doesn't always purport to do anything quite that incisive.
Yeah, I guess a lot of this was essentially I can't really say a bottle show. This entire show is to a certain extent a bottle show in some respects.
We have a ship. We get to shoot lots of things on the ship.
That's right. That's right. And you definitely get the sense that this one was playing a lot with the claustrophobic atmosphere of being in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there were certain aesthetics to this episode that I really liked. It did something different, which I think is one of the things that we've been a little critical of this season for. Early on in the season, it felt like they were trying to break out of their mold a little bit too much almost, and it wasn't really working. Here, they did a variation on a theme, and I think it worked a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right, and that brings us to our number two episode for the week, Mr. Robot, Season 2, Episode 3, Colonel Panic. Elliot vows to beat Mr. Robot. Angela gets a glimpse behind the curtain at E-Corp, and F-Society stirs up trouble. And this one came in also at an average of 8.25. And wow, once again, the highlight of this episode, Elliot and his serious mental issues.
Yes, of course.
It's an acting tour de force, but at the same time, it's like incredibly compelling to watch play out. Just him and his Adderall-fueled rants and raves, that was some really intriguing material, especially when he starts kind of battling for control of himself along the way. That was some of the more interesting material, and some of the best material that we've seen this week by far. Unfortunately, I think there were some other elements of the episode that didn't quite live up to it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's been the highlight so far. I mean, technically, third episode here, but because they did the double one to start. But the this whole battle Elliot is having with Mr. Robot and trying to keep him at bay, or is he keeping him at bay? And this is stuff that they certainly started doing last season. But now, I mean, the way that they are managing to play with the whole idea of perception versus reality is getting close to Philip K. Dick's Scanner Darkly territory, which is about the pinnacle for people in strange mental states fuguing into different versions of themselves.
Yeah, I guess it's we have the subplot with Angela, I think, was probably the one that wasn't quite as interesting to me, although there were still some elements there of the whole concept of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that I think in terms of the execution, it's been a little lacking. But I have liked this whole concept of exploring somebody in this situation who does decide to say, what the heck, I'll sell out and see what that feels like. and certainly with the after her dominance of the cubicles last episode, seeing things being a little bit more problematic this time. I am intrigued to see where they go with that. I just hope it they get a little less static and cliched with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree. Let's see. Next on the list then is our number one show for the week, and that would be The Musketeers, Season 3, Episode 9, The Prize. There was no recap. That was the surprise.
Yes, well, I think I can basically say the king dies and the Dauphin becomes a hot potato.
Yeah, there you go. That actually is a pretty good way of describing it. So let's see. For me, I mean, this one came in an average of 9, so it was the top episode for the week. But for me, yeah, this is the penultimate episode for the series, so yes, we are starting to see things get pretty dark.
Absolutely. Kind of expected, and I think it was intimated that people were going to fall. And certainly sort of the combination of bringing all of these plots and all of these machinations around the king's impending death to a head, but then combined with just the basic swashbuckling mission of protecting the Dauphin and trying to keep him safe, really sort of brought together the major elements of the series, and then leading up to a darn fine sacrificial last stand by Treville, who I think particularly in this last series, as he's moved into this role as courtier and major advisor and reluctant runner of the country at the moment, or briefly I should say, I thought they did a very nice job of giving Hugo Spear a lot more to do, and as these things go, a pretty darn fine death in the end.
Yeah, that was one of the better deaths. I mean, I was expecting a couple more, but I guess they're going to have something for the finale, right? But he went out well. He went out about as heroically as one would hope that Treville would go out after 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. So, it's a series that this third series, I should say, has been a lot better, with the one exception of that little stretch in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
It started off really strong, and it kind of dipped a little bit, and it's come back just as well, I think, if not better here at the end. So certainly I believe that this is the strongest episode or season for The Musketeers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm really looking forward to the finale.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, and that means that we can get into the episodes that are here in the middle, and that would be, first of all, we have Killjoys, Season 2, Episode 4, Schooled. A seemingly simple escort mission takes a frightening turn when the Killjoys discover students have mysteriously disappeared from a school for gifted Westerly children.
Mm.
And this one came in at an average of 8. 8. How surprising that shows up in this particular... Anyway. What were your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was cruising along nicely. I mean, they seem to have hit their stride in terms of having these individual missions coming up, finding that nice mix between having that as the focus for the action, but at the same time keeping the more serialized elements going, and this sort of ongoing. Uncomfortable partnership and delving into what exactly is happening at those upper levels of the rack.
That's right, but I kind of liked the change up here. I mean, it doesn't always work out when you've got children in the episodes,
yes,
especially a show that is kind of known for its kind of
bodiness, shall we say?
Yes, I was going to say that kind of hip sexiness,
yes,
if you will. But it did work because it is showing how creepy and insidious level 8 can be.
Yep.
Which is always good. Fleshing that out, especially since it was such an important part of that season. That first season, rather. Mm-hmm. And it has really been explored a lot more here in the second season. To great effect, I should say. Although I'm still curious to see exactly how all the different ways in which level 8 is, and perhaps beyond, continue to interweave into the various characters' arcs this season. It seems like they have their hands, their tendrils, their implants in everything.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Almost like if it were the blue hand people from Firefly. Right?
Yes.
Maybe. Slightly.
Yes, the influence remains strong with that one. But...
yeah, it's obviously part of the show's lineage, shall we say.
Of course, of course.
Next on the list, we have Outcast, Season 1, Episode 7, The Damage Done. Kyle and Allison reconnect to their past, and Reverend Anderson overdoes it during Remembrance Day. And I give this one an 8, as I am wont to do with the show. The twist at the end of this episode involving Kyle and Allison going to make things very complicated going forward. And as we are getting towards the latter half of the first season of this show, it certainly feels like the demonic presence in town is increasing in power and perhaps gaining momentum, as one would expect from the first season of a Robert Kirkman fueled show.
Indeed.
So, yes. If you don't mind taking the next one, Edmund.
Certainly. That would be Powers, Season 2, Episode 9, Slain Dragons. Powers start dropping from the sky, and Walker suspects an old friend is behind it. Pilgrim pursues Ghost, believing he is responsible. Callista confronts Super Shock, but the encounter causes her to reconsider being a power. And both of us gave this an 8. I believe this also was a penultimate episode. Is that right, John? Was this?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And certainly the way they were setting things up, I was intrigued with the way they have gone with the intimation that of whether Ghost is a figment of Super Shock's imagination or not. Even though we have now, we certainly seem to have physically seen him. Being the one who first brought that up, I'm going to still hold out hope that it might be explained the other way. but other than that, it's been an interesting path. I think they've been having to run trying to introduce this new group, I think they have been sort of trying to find their footing after losing Retro Girl, this at least was showing signs that leading into this finale, perhaps they have managed to find some sort of equilibrium.
Yes, that's true. I felt like this episode was really getting them back where they were right before we had the revelation about Retro Girl, mm-hmm. the dead one, really kind of giving us a little bit more to work with coming into the end of the season. I know I was worried about that previously, I think for good reason. But I think we have the makings of a good finale here.
Yes, definitely.
Which would, be... a nice way for them to bounce back. This second season of Powers has been much better than the first, I've noticed.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know it's strange on the PlayStation streaming network, but no word yet about whether they are going to get to continue?
No, I have not heard much about that.
Okay.
But let's see. That would mean that we are going to round it out with... I keep hitting the wrong tab. This is not a... This is just not my... we're actually going to round it out with the second episode of the first season of Stranger Things, entitled The Weirdo on Maple Street. Great title. Yes. Mike hides the mysterious girl in his house. Joyce gets a strange phone call. Again, coming in at an 8. And yeah, I'm still really enjoying the show. It's very nostalgic. It's got a lot of that John Carpenter, Stephen King, Steven Spielberg. If they all had a love child, it would be Stranger Things.
Okay. Yeah, no,
including the soundtrack.
I'm still trying to decide, but I'm getting tempted, especially since things are a little slow right now. Maybe I will catch up.
Yes, I would recommend it. I've heard a lot of folks on the rest of the VOGUE network, including some folks over at Orange Lounge Radio. I believe Bobby Blackwolf even brought it up as something that they were enjoying a great deal. So they've probably seen the entire season. I'm still parsing it out a little bit by little bit.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think initially I was getting the impression it was more spoofs of the like the 80s slasher films, which I wasn't so much into. But when you were bringing up more of those Carpenter, Stephen King stuff, and certainly the Spielberg influences, that sounds like it's definitely more in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely thriller type of atmosphere to it, so it definitely helps give it a little bit of a mixture. But it's pretty good so far from what I've seen. I've enjoyed it quite a bit. So that is actually it for our episodic discussion, which
yes.
means that this is coming in a little bit short this week. I wonder if maybe we just have two episodes this week. It may be.
I'm thinking that's quite likely. I kind of suspected that as we were starting, but yeah, that seems more and more the case.
Yes. You never know how long it's going to take to get through some of the news, right? So, we can go ahead then into some open topics and. Let's see, where shall we begin? I guess maybe with some feedback from our friend over at VOGUENetwork.com's forums. We have some brief feedback from S. Elliot Fisher as I get over to that page eventually.
Yes.
There we go. Interwebs are being difficult. Anyway, a little bit of filming news as he is out there on Staten Island.
Right.
He says, for your information, season 3 of Gotham and season 1 of Iron Fist are currently filming simultaneously on Staten Island.
Okay.
Does that mean that Iron Fist is fighting the villains in Gotham?
Well, I suspect that he could probably clean that up pretty quickly and then they wouldn't have a show anymore, so...
Yeah, exactly. A lot more efficiently than Jim Gordon seems to be doing.
Yes, exactly.
Since he's not allowed to beat the villains, or there wouldn't be. We've been over this many times.
An entire later canon that means all these people have to survive. Yes, but anyway.
But that's cool. I mean, certainly I love the fact that there are things still being filmed around the various boroughs of New York.
Oh, absolutely.
I will miss the opportunity to happen upon the occasional scene from Person of Interest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I started getting into the various Facebook Person of Interest fandoms, it was quite extraordinary how basically it seemed like within... 6 hours of a Person of Interest, parking placard going up in, anywhere in the five boroughs, it would get posted on Facebook. Person of Interest is filming here tomorrow. and there were various fans who did take vacations to New York during the months when they would be filming and would show up to see what they were up to that day.
Yes, indeed. Lots of stuff that are, it's surprising to me how much stuff is still filmed there other than the stuff that, of course, is... Okay, I should say, it's somewhat ironic sometimes when something is supposedly in New York, it's filmed elsewhere.
Yes.
When it's authentic.
Yeah, although the one that kind of amuses me now is the whole thing of the Americans being shot in New York City, even though it's supposed to be Washington. And for those of us who know the city well enough, there are various times. I seem to remember, particularly during the park pursuit of Martha last season, when we're like, I'm just going to, have to suspend my disbelief. And the fact that I know that that is in Queens isn't going to get in the way of enjoying the show.
Indeed. All right. Let's see then. I guess now we can get into a few open topics. I don't know if you had anything that you wanted to bring to the table.
Well, I was going to mention that I have finally been working on filling that huge gaping hole in my TV viewing of the last 15 years or so, and have once again started back on The Wire. I'd gotten through season one, gotten slightly bogged down at the beginning of season two, and got back into season two, and certainly once the whole team was back together around episode three or so, things started cruising along very nicely. So I now, of course, have completely binge watched. Watched season two over the last few days, and the one thing which I was sort of aware of, certainly from the number of people who would keep commenting on it, is that it has actually wound up being a very nice little way to get over my person of interest withdrawal, because there were of course a number of Wire alumni who wound up on Person of Interest, as well as of course quite a few other drama series, given the Wire's excellence, but it is kind of fun seeing Clark Peters and John Doman in other slightly different but still somewhat tangential roles to the ones that they wound up with later. And of course, since I had not watched The Wire, I wasn't aware of Lance Reddick when Fringe came on, and it's now a lot of fun watching The Wire, imagining him in that other role. So season two is done, and I'm sure I will be cruising my way through the subsequent three seasons in the next month or so.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a show that I've always wanted to go and watch, especially all the way back when Bronze Thumb brought it up, by what I believe was our very first episode.
Yes, indeed. Yes. But it is very much worth it. Of course, in my case, I mean, it was always absurd, given how much I adored Homicide: Life on the Street, which David Simon had co-created over on NBC before moving on to HBO and getting to do the darker, grittier version. But with all of the same storytelling and character development that they showed on Homicide, just enhanced by that HBO premium cable setting.
Yes, indeed. And I just remember reading so much about the background of that show and where it came from, but mm-hmm. the real life inspirations.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the part that really fascinates me, is the way that some of those fictional adaptations, recreations, how you want to put it, I'm not sure, but that apparently it's very close to real world.
Yes,
in many respects.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, and certainly. The whole idea that they are doing good police work, they do have successes, but unlike your conventional network cop show, based on the first two seasons, yes, they have successes, but they never manage to get everybody, or and people slip through the cracks, and the case isn't perfect or airtight. So that degree of reality is quite refreshing.
Exactly. That show and what was the other one? I was just thinking, an HBO show that I really never have seen, need to go back and see. I think it's Oz.
Yes, Oz is, that was between Homicide and The Corner and then The Wire. Oz, it's extremely raw and dark. I've watched the first couple of episodes, or first two or three episodes, and had a hard time continuing with it. Because again, I mean, it's a very realistic and very brutal depiction of what happens in major prisons. Again, in this case, outside of Baltimore, because that's that is the bailiwick for these producers and creators.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much out there for me to binge watch.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, well, but I mean, I was going to say the other big one for me is I watched the first season of Deadwood, but I still haven't watched the other two. So that's my other big HBO hole that I need to fill.
Yes,
especially since Mr. McShane is about to be tearing it up as Mr. Wednesday. So
yes, looking forward to that so much. Deadwood. I wish they had. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Mm-hmm. HBO.
Yep. Well, it's funny. I mean, you know, for all of their success overall, I mean, there was that period when it seemed like HBO was the period. You know, it was the network where, okay, you can go and do a really interesting show for three seasons, and then we're going to cancel you prematurely.
Yeah. That was right around the era of Carnival and so forth.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. The past week, there's been some personal things that I've had to attend to in terms of work-related stuff. So that's been a little bit distracting. But other than that, and seeing Star Trek Beyond again.
Oh, yes. Okay.
In 3D IMAX.
Ooh, okay.
Now, let me put it this way. If you went and saw, because Gary asked before, he unfortunately couldn't be here tonight, but he asked before, if he had seen it in 3D, was it worth going to see in 3D IMAX? Yes. And I feel like the difference there between one and the other, probably not warranted to go and see that. But if you saw the standard 2D version, the upgrade in terms, surely in terms of sound and size of picture, might push you over the edge.
Okay.
For me, it was the sound in particular. There were a couple oddities, and I mean, maybe it's because I saw one version, one right after the other within a couple days, was that there were lines of dialogue that I was able to kind of parse out. In the 2D version, it was very prominent. In the 3D IMAX, it was much harder to hear in the sound mix. So it was kind of interesting just because I knew the story that, yeah, I was able to kind of make those comparisons. But I will say this, too. It holds up on a second viewing very well.
Okay.
You see some of those mid-act scenes a little bit more because you know what to look for.
Sure, yeah.
But the overall story really works well. And in fact, I was able to kind of talk more with Gary about some of these seeming continuity errors that they actually kind of allude to the explanation for in the movie. But I'll be very interested to find out if there is going to be a director's cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This movie feels like Into Darkness felt like it needed to be edited down a little bit.
Yes, definitely.
This one feels like there needs to be a little bit more meat to the bone in the middle. But for a theatrical release, I completely understand why they have to cut the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
The essentials are there. It's that it's sometimes cutting a little closer to the bone than I would like.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the people that I went to the second time, the comment that was made, and this is funny because I believe either you or Gary said this, was that the repartee in this film was not quite as sharp as it had been previously.
I was the one who brought that up. Where it felt forced, and I was just surprised that these lines that I'd seen lines I'd seen in the trailer where they come up and they just seem inserted in there just to give you a line to say in the trailer rather than coming organically out of the situation.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was one of the things that I did. In fact, there's a non-zero possibility I'll be seeing the movie again before this episode hits the airwaves. Beyond that, no pun intended, mainly catching up on some things. I was away, and so there were some Pokemon Go excursions that needed to take place. For the record, I am now at level 16.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm still at level. Did not start.
But yeah. Anyway. Yes. Yes. All right. This is more for the benefit of those who are having fun with the game.
Yes, I know. I know.
Certainly, it was great walking into Canada only 2 days after they opened up the servers and such, and walking in with a stronger character and going right to the tower or the gym rather in the airport and immediately taking it over. Level 16, and I've got my little friends here, Sashiel, Samshel, and Ramiel as my top fighters.
Very nice.
So yes, playing with a theme, folks, playing with a theme. But beyond that, because really the fun there is just going out in the community sense of the word, going and seeing, what people are doing. And, we were able to, go when there was a bit of a gathering at the park up in the center of town. So that was fun. But also catching up on some of the summer season's anime shows. I think I mentioned this slightly before, But since I am able to do so and we have a little bit of time, I'll go ahead and look at some of the titles and kind of give my impression. One of the ones that I'm really enjoying is called 91 Days. This is a, I guess you could say it is a kind of mafia tale, kind of Godfather inspired.
Okay.
And so enjoying that quite a bit. So that's only a few episodes in. So if that's if there's something that you know you were intrigued by and wanted to go see, there's always, that one I would recommend. There is also one that I'm really liking. There's a it's got a slight little bit of fan service to it, but
there's nothing wrong with that.
You know. Some of our favorites have some fan service built in, yes. Baked into the into it. So there you are. Alderaan on the Sky. This is based on some light novels, from my what I understand, that were released in Japan. They are not available, at least officially licensed over here in the U.S.
Okay.
But it seems very much inspired by some of the kind of stock and trade Japanese RPGs, like your older Final Fantasies or your Tales of games.
Okay.
It's, you know, basically warring empires, young people who, you know, are kind of pulled into the conflict and turn out to be far more important. But I really like the characters. I like the way that the story is progressing. It's one that I look forward to each week. So I would definitely recommend that if you're into that kind of, story. There is the second season of Food Wars, which is absolutely as ridiculous as the title would suggest.
Okay.
Full of fan service, completely tongue-in-cheek. But one of the interesting things about it is that the actual cooking aspect of the show gets into some details that are pretty interesting. And anyone who is looking for some ideas about Japanese cuisine or so forth might get something out of that show just from that side of it alone.
Okay. Yes. Well, yeah. I'm one of those people who might be intrigued based on that alone.
be prepared to laugh yourself silly.
Yes.
It doesn't take itself seriously. So
yes.
There you go. And then another show that this is not my usual kind of show, but it's called Orange. And it is very much a slice of life / romance type anime. But the hook here is that the main female character gets a letter from herself from 10 years in the future.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
I think I may have mentioned this before.
Yes, you did. You did. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm still watching the episodes, and they still are really good.
Okay, cool.
If you're looking for something that's going to make you a little weepy, this one is good because it's like not a dry eye mm-hmm. in the room
mm-hmm.
Because it's just so earnest.
Okay.
One that I'm not as happy with, because I will kind of give a couple that I'm on the fence about.
Yep.
One is called Taboo Tattoo. It is so ridiculously overstuffed with fan service. It's not even funny.
Okay.
And the plot does not make up for it. I've tried to go. I've gone through 4 episodes, and I've just about exhausted my patience for it.
Okay. Yeah, well, something about that title just sounded over the top anyway.
It does, doesn't it? And then there is one called Qualidia Code. This one is very much I'm not sure yet. The concept is interesting. Basically, paired off young people with superpowers that are fighting the incursions of monsters. I mean, come on, that's about as stock and trade as you get.
Of course.
Yes. The pairs are, you know, anywhere from, you know, two people who grew up and are kind of romantically interested in each other, brother and sister, two mm-hmm. girls, you know, the whole kind of thing. Yes, so they've got a little bit of variety there. But it definitely gets into the fan service-y. I keep bringing that up because it seems to be a theme. Yes. It just gets a little over the top with that. And so it's... Usually I wind up going, can we just get on with it?
Sure. Yeah.
But they at least do in that show. I've seen 3 episodes and there's still enough for me to keep coming back and looking at it. Mm-hmm. Maybe the characters will grow on me. There was a bit more tragedy in the 3rd episode than I was expecting. So, sorry, a little bit of spoiler, but too bad. but certainly more than I saw in the tattoo one. That one is just not working. And what is it with this trend in recent years to have characters that are supposed to be adults, but they're trapped in like young teenage bodies. They're always girls, by the way. No surprise there.
Yes,
but come
on. Of course. Yeah. I don't know. Why does Hollywood trot out a body swap comedy every 6 years or so?
Okay. That's a good point. But no, guys, it didn't work in Rebuild number 3. Don't keep doing it. All you're doing is reminding me of things that made me angry.
Yes.
One that I didn't mention here, but I mentioned previously, is ReLife. It's out there, all 13 episodes. It's a pretty good slice of life one as well. I would recommend because you can binge watch that pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I like the characters, especially. Now I've seen so many of these, the names are blending together.
Uh-oh, yes.
It's the angry redhead. The
what a surprise!
I know. But okay, but now the reason that I do enjoy that, I think it's Kairu is her name.
Okay.
Sorry. The reason that I like it and like the show and like the character is that unlike certain Sun characters that are just there just to be, loud, obnoxious, love mm-hmm. interest and so forth, the character is actually given a really good background. A reason why she is the way that she is and the interactions that you expect to start happening don't happen. It's other, ways that things go. So there's some nice little surprises at the end. So it's a fun show. I would do that. But yeah, the summer season so far, there's a couple I haven't really started. I know Berserk started a different series. I haven't seen that yet. And I've got to get into that one a little bit more. But otherwise, there's a whole lot of other stuff that's on this summer. Those were the only ones that really jumped out at me. I know that there's the Gundam show, but that's more a continuation. For right now, but
of course.
That's it for Crunchyroll's list here. Over on Funimation, there are a couple of shows over there that I need to get into. There's an adaptation of Tales of Zestiria.
Hmm.
So they just finished playing that game. I want to see how closely they adhere.
Indeed, yeah.
So to speak. Okay. Well, that being the case, I'm pretty much... Oh, no, wait. I did read something else.
Oh, yes.
I finished reading a Star Trek Voyager book called A Pocket Full of Lies. I believe I talked about this one last week, where they had incorporated elements of the Year of Hell episodes of Voyager.
Right.
Just finished that book. It did end very well.
Good. Okay.
And again, this is an author that is going to be a writer on Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is if she can make me actually like Janeway as a character.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay.
There you go. Great continuity references and everything else. I know this is a little bit of a repeat of stuff that we talked about last time, but we had time to flesh it out a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I figured why not.
Yeah. And okay. I actually just realized because for me, my whole thing was basically I sort of petered out on Star Trek on TV in the latter part of the Voyager seasons. I think it was around season 5 that I finally stopped watching regularly, as I had, of course, since Next Generation debuted. And I just realized that perhaps getting into the novels would be a better way of reintroducing myself to that universe because I have Googled what actually happened in the Voyager finales and that sort of thing, which just confirmed that I was really happy I wasn't watching them at the time. but perhaps the novels would be a way of readjusting my attitude towards it.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know that it's really. It's funny because my opinion of Voyager doesn't change. It's not changing. It's not the series itself. I'm not suddenly getting an appreciation.
Well, I wasn't expecting it to do that. I was just saying, if at least some stories that would wash away some of the memories of the latter seasons of Voyager.
Yes. Yeah, infamously kind of laced with so much Seven of Nine.
Yes. Yeah.
Because of. Ron and Braga's relationship with Jerry Ryan, but there we are.
Anyway.
Yes. Come on, these things are infamous, though. But what is ironic, though, is that, like you said, I think people were getting a bit burnt out, and one of the things that the discussion about Beyond and everything else, just to bring that a little bit into it again,
absolutely,
that made it interesting is that Enterprise definitely then was on the coattails of people getting just sick and tired of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are some people that have gone back and seen Voyager and find a lot that was kind of unappreciated at the time. Fair enough. I feel like, as Gary has said many times, I actually agree with him because I've gone back and looked at it. Enterprise is the hidden gem there.
Yes.
Not just the last 2 seasons, where there were continuity references left and right. I really think taking a look at those first two seasons and not trying to think of it as this radical departure from the mold that it was in.
Yes, and not to mention, when it's on DVD, you can fast forward through the theme. You don't have to listen to it each time.
That's right.
for those who had the issues with that.
But yes, one thing I guess we should get into as we wrap this up is that there is going to be some shifting around in August in terms of our show. We're going to try and get in as many of the shows as we normally would as we can, whether it be Edmund and I, Gary and I, Edmund and Gary, some combination thereof.
Yes.
But all three of us are in some way, shape, or form traveling in August.
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to do what we can to fit it in. We are also dealing with the fact that, as we have already discovered this week, we do have some shortfalls, I guess you could say, in some of the content. Although I think we may actually be able to, now that I'm thinking about it, squeeze out a third one. We might. But
Yes. Well, there are certain things in progress that we can return to, of course.
That's right. So, I mean, we can, we definitely have material to do it with, but the main thing is are we going to have people all in the same place at the same time? That's going to be the trick. So, there may be some lapses here and there. I apologize in advance, but it's definitely all leading towards the most definite absence later in August, or rather early September. Labor Day weekend, of course, is Dragon Con.
Yes.
And basically, if any show that is on VOG Network has at least a pretty good chance of not being on that week.
Yes.
Orange Lounge Radio, Bobby Blackwolf, any shows that Rob Roberts is on, forget it, because we're all going to be down there. So whether or not we manage to squeak out a show from Dragon Con, we don't know. We'll have to see. But no promises. Just saying that that is our normal interruption. It's just going to be a little bit of an extended one because of our timing. So if this is it for the week, just wanted to end on that particular note. But like I said, I think we may have something coming that we can delve into that we may be able to put on our typical Friday show. So I guess we'll all find out. Until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG Network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.